All right, here we go. Saturday, John, Colin Kaepernick sent this tweet. Quote, black people have been dehumanized, brutalized, criminalized, and terrorized by America for centuries and are expected to join your commemoration of independence while you enslaved our ancestors. We reject your celebration of white supremacy and look forward to liberation for all. What do you think of the tweet?
Well, I have trouble with Kaepernick making tweets like that because he openly says he doesn't vote. So when he tries to get politically active, I don't think it's that he can't make a good point. It's just that I think he sends the worst message possible by telling others that voting does no good. In my opinion, voting is one of the few ways you can exercise your right as a citizen. I think it's really important. And so I take everything Colin says politically with that through looking through that vortex. But it doesn't mean he can't have a valid opinion. I mean, if that's the way he feels and he wants to put that out there, go ahead. But every time he does something like that, I think this is a guy who advocates don't vote. So it always taints it. How about you?
Well, he doesn't really talk about voting in there or, frankly, politics, party politics, nothing like that.
Well, I don't care how he votes. I just think he should vote.
I
think it's one of the few, like LeBron, for example, is starting.
Yeah, I know. I've been trying to volunteer for it.
To try and encourage more people to vote. And Colin tells people that voting is a waste of your time. So there you go.
Yeah, I think the tweet is in keeping with Colin Kaepernick's beliefs. And I understand why some African-Americans may not look at Independence Day as a date of their independence. In fact, maybe that's what Juneteenth is all about, as opposed to the 4th of July. So I understand the tweet. I think that he's entitled to say it. It's stirred up a lot of social media conversation, and I think that was his goal all along.
All right, Mace, WNBA star Maya Moore sat out the entire season last year and helped overturn the conviction of Jonathan Irons, who was serving a 50-year prison sentence. He was finally released on Friday. Here's my question. Why isn't this story a bigger deal? Maya Moore is a top five player in her sport. Some people argue top three. She basically gave up her career because she thought this guy was wrongly imprisoned, and she helped get him out. Yet I don't feel like it received the attention or the coverage that a story like that would merit if she played another sport. Am I making something out of nothing here, or do you agree?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for I know on ESPN on Friday and on this show on Friday, we talked a lot about Maya Moore and what she did, which is just an unbelievably selfless act. I honestly would like to know more about it. Like, how did she identify this one wrongly accused guy as the one that she was going to champion? I don't know the answer to that, do you?
I don't. She met him in 1998 in a prison ministry, so it may have been the fact that this particular person connected with her.
She knew, right.
She said, when I stepped away from the court 2 years ago, I really wanted to shift my priorities to be able to be more available, more present, to show up for things I felt mattered more than being a professional athlete. I just think this is an extraordinary sacrifice that didn't get enough attention, or maybe it did get a lot of attention and I just didn't focus on it. But I, you know, can you imagine if Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Mike Trout or Patrick Mahomes quit their respective sport to help right a wrong, and then it worked, then they got the
right
guy out of prison? I just think it's an extraordinary story.
It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story. And, you know, we all talk about criminal justice reform, and there was a big criminal justice reform bill passed, I think, last year through Congress. So we've made some steps in that direction. But when you're talking about social justice, criminal justice reform is one of those parts of that that tree, one of the branches of that tree that I think we need the most reform around. And here is Maya Moore, who quite literally put her money where her mouth is and went and did something about it. So, yeah, good for Maya Moore.
It's you.
Yesterday, Cam Newton sent out a shirtless workout video saying this: "I'm getting tired of being humble now." Is Cam's act going to work with Bill Belichick and the Patriots culture?
I don't know why I think this, but I think he's going to do well there. I think he's got something to prove. I think that Belichick is a football genius. I think they could put him in the right situation. And I wish I could be more precise and give you specific examples. I just have this feeling it's going to work. How about you?
I think that Jared Stidham will lead the New England Patriots to a 10-6 record. I'm of that belief, and you know, I've heard people like Scott Zolak talk about this, and apparently there's another coach inside the AFC East who's talked about this, that Bill Belichick just loves Jared Stidham. And Cam Newton is the shiny new object, but it's Jared Stidham's job to lose. I just don't think there's any guarantee that that Cam is going to be the starter. It's certainly not to start the season. But the "I'm getting tired of being humble now," that probably doesn't fly with Belichick.
Yeah, Belichick probably runs a pretty tight ship there. Okay, Mace, so be careful how you answer this one. It's a little touchy, but I find it really fascinating.
Okay.
There was a Trump 2020 paint scheme on a NASCAR at the Brickyard 400 on Sunday. Now, remember, Bubba Wallace had a Black Lives Matter paint scheme and still does. So this is just different people expressing their different political viewpoints on a NASCAR. But here's my question. If you ran NASCAR, how far could this go? For example, they've already said they won't tolerate Confederate flags. So that's a line that they won't let any driver cross. But, for example, if one driver came out with a pro-choice paint scheme and another driver came out with a pro-life paint scheme, would you allow both of those? I mean, would you allow for full political expression as long as it doesn't attack one specific group? Like, Confederate flag we know is out, but would you allow any hot button political issue to be represented on a car as long as you have allowed the voice of both sides?
Well, I mean, there's a difference between a Black Lives Matter car and a Trump 2020 car. One is actually overtly political, and the other one is just our generally agreed to concept in this country that African Americans have gotten the short end of the stick for a really long time, have been at the hands of police brutality and justice reform and all that stuff.
Comp to the Trump 2020 paint scheme would be a Biden 2020.
A Biden 2020, exactly.
Which you would obviously have to allow. Now that you've allowed one, you'd have to allow the other. But would you allow for other issues to be represented on NASCAR? Like, pick whatever sensitive, hot political button you could
push. Well, pro-choice and pro-life is a pretty good one.
Right. If you were the NASCAR guy, would you allow both sides? Or would you just say, no, I don't want to wade into that?
I would say I understand a Trump 2020 car and understand that driver probably has conviction of his support for the president. And I believe that Bubba Wallace has got, believes in the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't think either one of those crossed the line. I don't think I would want to do pro-choice, pro-life. I think then you're actually delving into political issues that have the potential to divide fans. And although, you know what? Here's the thing. Hasn't it been generally positive that Bubba Wallace put Black Lives Matter on his car?
Especially within NASCAR, the other drivers have been incredibly supportive. The guy who drove the Trump 2020 car, Corey LaJoie, is not a very good driver. He doesn't win very much. So and if you look at the car, it just looks like basically a political sign.
Right,
that
right.
He's the number 32. He drives a Ford Mustang, and it's out there. It would just blend in with the other cars. If you allow individual candidates to be represented on cars, I wonder what the next logical step is. Like stem cells, if you could come out pro-stem cell anti. It's kind of in the same family as the pro-life, pro-choice thing. You're opening up a whole can of worms there that I don't know if you want on TV as part of your brand. But it's interesting that they allowed this. I'm surprised that they did, but they did.
Yeah. All right. Patrick Mahomes signed a 10-year, $400 million contract.
By the way, update, Mace. It's now up to $503 million.
People $503 million contract.
He can make up to $503 million. Half a billion he could make.
Okay. Good deal, bad deal for the Chiefs.
Here's the thing about football deals.
It's an unbelievable deal for Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, but here's the thing about football deals. What is the guaranteed money? That's what I need to know. We hear all the time these gigantic numbers being thrown out. If Mahomes, he has $140 million injury guarantee, that if he were to be injured on the very first day of the contract and never be able to play football again, he gets $140 million, which is a pretty good deal for him.
His guaranteed money is $140 million.
Right.
In the event of injury.
So why do we, and I just corrected you and said it's up to, he can make $503 million. Why do we say it's a $500 million contract when they only have to guarantee $140? You know what I'm saying? I would have to see Patrick's guarantees. I think it's a great deal for him. The Chiefs, if they're only on the hook for $140 million, sure. But I'd have to see what they're on the hook for otherwise. That's what would determine my
10
answer.
10 years is such a long time.
Yeah.
In the life of a quarterback, 10 years is a really long time. But you're right. It is the big flashy $503 million number that jumps out at you. And it looks like, from what I can tell, the guaranteed money is $140. How much money is Jared Goff owed, guaranteed?
I think he gets $110, right? In that neighborhood is $110 million guaranteed. And Carson Wentz is in that boat, too.
Yeah, $110 million is the guarantee for – so. On a scale, that's about right. If Jared Goff is worth $110 million guaranteed, then Patrick Mahomes probably is worth $140. So it's kind of the going rate, I guess, for quarterbacks. 10 years is just a really long time.
Funch. All right. Mace, Antonio Brown worked out with Russell Wilson last week. Brown has a lot of off-the-field issues, but if he could get those sorted out, wouldn't he make the Seahawks a lot better in the NFC West? They don't really have a number one wide receiver there. Antonio Brown, if he could get his act together, would make them a lot better, wouldn't he?
Sure he would. I mean, I find it hard to believe that Antonio Brown is going to be back in the league. I really do. I think one of the issues that's still looming over all this is he's got a sexual harassment and a sexual misconduct investigations that are going on at the NFL side. So even once he's signed, there's been no results to that. He will probably have a suspension before he ever sets foot in a game. I also tend to believe that he's always on the verge of self-destructing. I hope that if he does get a deal, if he doesn't get a deal, that he gets the right counseling to be able to straighten out his life, because he certainly had some major issues, if you want to read into it a little bit. So I'm going to stand by. I don't think we're ever going to see him in the league again.
It might be a tall order. Right? Okay, did we find Ramona?
Yes, we did.
Okay. So is that coming up? Or are we going?
Yeah, Momo's going to join us next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hi, what's up? It is Monday as we get closer and closer to real-life actual sports. The Dodgers will have an exhibition game against the Angels on the 21st, and they will kick off the season on the 23rd against the San Francisco Giants, the evil hated ones. They will go San Francisco for 4, day off. And then they are at Houston for two. So right off the bat, we get our two biggest rivals, San Francisco and Houston, in the baseball schedule. And joining us right now is the woman who presided over the disastrous hot dog eating contest of 2020. It is Ramona Shelburne. Momo, how are you?
I'm feeling bad.
Why do you feel bad?
I feel all weekend I've just been living with this guilt. Like, I somehow contributed to this. Like, I when Carrie Campion messed up the marquee race, like, I feel like I was Carrie here. I don't know what I could have done differently.
Okay, first of all, Carrie literally could not put together ready, set, go. So you will never be as bad as Carrie was on the day of the marquee race. Number two, Ramona.
What I'm seeing, but I couldn't see what Alan Flea was doing.
Exactly.
Right, nobody could see what he was doing.
You've gotten to the heart of the issue, Ramona. The fact that any of you people are accepting this result is an outrage. This result is tainted. And you know me. I would like nothing more than to have Mason embarrassed on a national scale. But in this case, I smell a rat. And the rat's name is Sliwa. There was no wide shot, Ramona. There was no wide shot. We have no idea if he ate two hot dogs, four hot dogs, or, as he claims, nine hot dogs.
You know, I went back and looked at it, Momo, and I looked at it frame by frame.
Right.
And at no point do you see him actually put a hot dog in his mouth until after it's over.
Oh, I saw him putting a lot of things in his mouth and chewing a lot.
We have no idea how many hot dogs there were on that tray to start. They obviously, he showed us a tray with two at the end, but did he start with six on the tray? Did he start with seven on the tray? How many were on the tray to start?
I feel like I failed. Like, I should have like made sure that you each started with 11. Show me your 11 hot dogs. Like, I should have gotten visuals. There were things that we couldn't control that we thought we had control of, right? We tested beforehand. It worked fine. But then all of a sudden, when I start asking Alan to do things, he pretends like he can't hear me. I was like, Alan, how many hot dogs do you have? And he had his sound off or something. I don't know.
Well, Momo, here's the other thing, is you led me to believe that I was leading all along.
Yep.
So I did take my foot off the pedal at some point and thought, all right, eight's going to be enough.
I really think that you could blame this on me. I really do. Like, this is, I can own this for you, Ace. Like, I was probably my poor call of this and lack of information coming from Alan. You know, it is his job to try to do whatever he can to throw us off.
Yes.
He threw me off, and then I threw you off.
Yeah, it was a domino effect. And, you know, John is calling for a rematch.
I think that's the only acceptable outcome here. You can't declare Sliwa the winner. There is nothing to indicate here that he ate nine hot dogs. Nothing. Where is the evidence that he ate nine?
Yeah, and I feel bad for him, too, because if he really did eat nine, it's a hollow victory because nobody believes him.
But show us. Show us you eating. It's an eating contest, and we never saw him eating.
Mace, do you remember the name Rosie Ruiz?
I do remember the name Rosie Ruiz.
Okay. Rosie Ruiz is somebody who magically crossed the finish line at the Boston Marathon one year, and everybody went, wow, what a great time, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out Rosie Ruiz was in a convenience store and just popped into the middle of the race and blended in with everybody. I think Sliwa pulled a Rosie Ruiz.
Yes.
I don't think he ate nine hot dogs.
Yep.
There is no evidence that he did it. And Ramona, to your point earlier, that if he really ate nine, it would be bad because nobody believes him. I watched the thing an hour before the show. I don't believe him. I know the average person doesn't believe him. And if he can really do it, he can do it in the rematch. And we're going to get a wide shot so we can see all nine of those hot dogs go down his hatch. And if he can't do it, that's it. He cheated again, just like he did in the birthday game.
Well, I mean, look, I've been all weekend going over everything. And there was one tip-off that really got me.
By the way, how much time did you spend reliving this?
At least 45 minutes.
I'll try to make him not suck next time.
And he kept saying we. Like, he kept saying, we've been training all week. We are going to win this one. We are focused. We are feeling confident.
Yeah, who is we?
Who is we?
Yeah, how many people are there?
He texted me again, like, right before. And he was, like, you know, pumping himself up, and he was saying we. And I don't know. I mean, did he set me up too, Mace?
Who is we? Like, Mason has a theory that Morales and Tommy Lamb and Adam and Carlo were all in the bag for Sliwa. Doesn't that indicate we, Mace? Wouldn't that explain
the
we?
Oh, that would indicate we. You're absolutely right. We are going to win this thing.
I was in the studio. I was impartial. I was in the middle.
Bronstein, you can say that now, but how can we take what you say as real? Well, you're listen, in on it.
Are you saying we live in a simulation?
And opportunity. He had motive and opportunity. So all the people, Alan used to be a sales guy. Alan has connections to people who have money. Alan can funnel money wherever he wants it.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Can push people. When he says we, I mean, there may be a deep state here, guys, that you and I and Mason are learning about all the time. That yep. we can only sense.
Wow. That's ominous.
Yeah, that is ominous, and it's true. Rematch. It's the only acceptable outcome, Momo, is a rematch.
I mean, they do have to eat again, and that is not fun. Mace, was that fun?
No, it was not fun. I did not enjoy the process. It was disgusting. The dipping of the buns in the water is completely gross.
Dead.
Awful experience. But in order to right this wrong, I will avenge this conspiracy. I will take this on for real.
Momo, I'm going to change the subject. I have a question for you, okay?
Oh, okay.
I know you're very happy at ESPN.
Yeah.
Let's say I was a representative of a competing entity. If I was I'm running Bleacher Report, okay?
Okay.
And I know how happy you are at ESPN, but I need you to come to New York and be the masthead of my new NBA operation. And in order to get you to do it, I'm going to give you $60 million for 5 years, guaranteed.
Okay.
All right. I know you got to talk it over with Nevin. Daniel gets a vote. But is there any way you say no to that at the end of the day? You're my lead NBA person. I'm giving you $60 million guaranteed. Is the word no even a possibility?
No. I mean, come on.
No. How?
Okay.
$60 million.
All right. All right.
I mean,
so, guys.
She was just writing girls softball coverage in the Valley, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So, Momo, there is a rumor that is making the rounds in the NBA that the Brooklyn Nets are going to give Greg Popovich an offer he cannot refuse. The Godfather offer. So much money and so much guarantee that if he will come coach Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and lead the Nets, that offer will be sitting there waiting for him. Do you buy it?
Wow. I haven't heard that rumor. I don't know where you got it from. I love that conspiracy because we're in this vein today.
Right.
Look, Pop doesn't need any money. The difference is you offered me life-changing money because while I do make money from ESPN, I do well, I have never made money like that.
Right.
Pop has made money like that for a while.
So right.
It's a little different, right?
It's
like, have you ever had a really big multi-million dollar contract before? For him, the answer is yes. Now, Sean Marks is the GM in Brooklyn. So Sean Marks is the Spurs guy. No one knows better than him how great Pop is. No one knows how important a great coach is for guys like that. San Antonio obviously isn't really going anywhere or building anything right now. So I could understand why he would try, sure. I don't think Cup would do it, but it's the kind of opportunity that you can't just write off because, I mean,
Mace, you know what this is? Mace, this was the offer you got to go to New York. It was so much money and such a good offer that anything else didn't matter. And now if you had it to do over again, you might not do it. But at the time, it was an offer you couldn't refuse, right?
It was an offer I couldn't refuse. And, I mean, in fairness, it was an offer I couldn't refuse, but the station didn't make a wholehearted attempt to keep me.
Right. But I'm just saying, if I think it's interesting. I heard this on a podcast with Amin Alhassan. Mm-hmm. Amin doesn't think that Pop will do it.
I don't think Pop will do it either.
But he says it for Ramona, all the reasons you brought up, it is very, very interesting.
That's
because
interesting. It's not for the money, though. So the difference is for me, it would be like, whoa, $12 million a year. That would,
I mean, Pop is making $8 million a year.
Right, yeah. But this would be guaranteed.
So I don't think that kind of money matters as much to Pop in making the choice. I think it would be more about, you know, you'd want to have a team that has generational talent on it, that has a chance to win.
They do.
He's 21 years old.
Yep.
How many more years is he going to do this? That is an interesting challenge. Plus, you'd be working with a GM that you already like. You know, or does he want to just sort of slowly fade off into the sunset in San Antonio?
Right.
Well, hasn't the plan all along been fade into the sunset and then coach the Olympic team?
Well, he's already coaching the Olympic team.
Yeah,
I'm
saying, but wasn't that the farewell, coach the Olympic team at the end?
But now that Tim Duncan's gone, Ramona, does he have any reason to say Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili are all gone?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's very comfortable there. I think he really likes it there. But you know, I don't want to psychoanalyze too much because...
And he's 71 years old.
But, you know, he's very vibrant still. Like, I don't get the vibe from Pop that he's, like, you know, ready to retire.
But do you pick up and move to New York in a market like that at the age of 71 years old?
I mean, he is a foodie.
And you know what? Hey, Ramona, you know what would get this deal done? Throw in a winery. Give him a winery. You give him his own winery, and he's in.
He's got a label and everything.
Yeah.
Guys, I can't see it. Look, I'll say this. But, look, the man's wife passed away. She, you know, his retirement that he had hoped for and planned on has already, irreparably changed, right?
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
All of his assistants that he was best friends with have left in the last few years. So that's Mike Budenholzer and Brett Brown. Those are his best friends. And now they have their own jobs. And, a lot of the longtime guys in San Antonio have moved on, even the longtime staffers. So his staff is kind of young and different now than it's been. So it's, there's really just him and R.C. Buford are left from the old Spurs dynasty. Sometimes people, when they're, not all 71-year-olds are created alike. I mean, Pop, I know he lost, a bunch of weight over the last year. He's in great shape. He works out all the time. Maybe you want one last challenge. I don't know. I mean, I'm not basing this on any information on whether I think it'll happen or not, and I've had any serious conversations. But, the last few times I saw him, I just kind of felt like he wasn't ready to go yet. He wants to keep coaching.
Nope. Yeah. There you go. Be a fun thing to watch.
All right. Hey, Momo, thank you very much. I forgive you for the bad handling of the hot dog eating contest.
No.
We will have you back as a color analyst when we have the rematch.
Momo went big time.
My play-by-play career was not – it was kind of dead on arrival, huh?
Yeah, it is DOA. It is DOA.
Yeah.
Thank you, Momo.
Bye, Ramona.
All right, there's Ramona Shelburne joining us. Coming up next for you, the Dodgers schedule is out, and David Price is not going to be playing for the Dodgers in this restart of the season. He's not going to be playing. We'll get to all that stuff. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, people, we are now 7 days away from LAFC versus Houston in the MLS Is Back tournament that's being played in Orlando. Major League Baseball is now just 14 days away, start of the regular season. The Dodgers will open against the Giants. We'll get into that in a minute. And the NBA back, Lakers versus Clippers, only 24 days away. We are right on the verge of sports. John, the Dodgers will open up on the 23rd of July against the San Francisco Giants. They will play a four-game series of against the Giants, then get a day off and go to Houston for their only two games at Houston this year, and then at Arizona for four games after that. Among other highlights, let's see. The Dodgers will play the Angels at Anaheim August 14, 15, and 16. And the Astros will be at Dodger Stadium September 12th and 13th for their only two games at Dodger Stadium. And the Dodgers will finish the season. If these games count, they'll be important. Angels-Dodgers on September 25th, 26th, and 27th is the last game of the season.
And let's preface all this by saying we don't know what COVID can do to all these games that are being scheduled. We're just talking about them and assuming they're going to happen. We're not naive. We know that this could all get, you know, changed or altered. But let's say, for the sake of discussion, that it doesn't. Weird that they only play the Astros four times.
I thought
in the sake of the pandemic, I would have played all four of those games in one place. I would have flipped a coin and said, all right, the Astros get them all or the Dodgers get them all, just because, Mace, I think it's unnecessary travel, unnecessary risk. You talked about the games in Houston right after. So the Dodgers are going to open up the season against the Giants. Then they got to go on and get on a plane and go to all the way to Houston for just two games and then get back on the plane and come back to Arizona. To me, it just seems like the way to handle that would be go down to Houston, play four there, then play four against the Rangers. You only have to go to Texas once. Or if you were going to play the games in L.A., do the same thing for the Texas teams. The unnecessary travel and going all the way to Texas for two games was a red flag for me. How about
yeah.
you?
If you've got to play two in Houston, I don't know the way around. I mean, I think fans want to see Houston at Dodger Stadium.
Even with no fans, does it matter?
Well, they have not ruled out fans for September.
But have they ruled out fans in Houston at the end of this month?
I don't know the end. I know that governor has been really aggressive down there. I don't know what his position is.
He seemed to have a come to Jesus moment over the weekend.
Yeah.
Where he was telling people to, you know, social distance and stay back and all that good stuff. But keep in mind that when you hear those guys talk about football, talk about games at the University of Texas, at Cowboys Stadium in Houston for the Texans, they're talking about fans.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, if you look at baseball, the Angels had two positive COVID tests. The Dodgers, according to ESPN, had seen some members test positive, would not specify whether any of those members were active players, but said none of those positive tests have resulted in symptoms that have been problematic. So these camps are going on right now. And it seems as though the one place that it's been screwed up is Washington, where they have been slow to get their test results. But for the most part, Major League Baseball appears to be moving on.
Although when you hear the players talk, did you hear Sean Doolittle?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I think we might have pulled that, Funch. Did you have Sean Doolittle?
I mean, he was incredible. Sean Doolittle is a player for the World Champion Nationals. He was just incredibly candid about his... Is indifference the right word, or he just doesn't sound like a guy who's convinced they should play?
Okay, here's Sean Doolittle. Oh, we don't have it. Sean Doolittle was very, very uncertain in his comments. Mike Trout did a Zoom press conference a little bit earlier today. He talked about still not being comfortable with Major League Baseball's plan. Or not.
Yeah, it's
honestly still don't feel comfortable. Obviously with the baby coming, There's a lot of stuff going through my mind right now, my wife's mind, my family, just trying to be the safest and most cautious way to get through a season. You know, I've told Billy, I've told a bunch of the guys, you know, it's going to be tough. I gotta be really cautious these next few weeks. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, obviously I don't want to test positive and I don't want to bring it back to my wife. You know, we've thought hard about all this, you know, still thinking about all this. It's a tough time, tough situation we're in, everybody's in. And, you know, everybody's got a responsibility in this clubhouse to, you know, social distance, stay inside, wear a mask, and, you know, keep everybody safe.
So that's Mike Trout. Here is Sean Doolittle. We talked about this a minute ago from the world champion Washington Nationals.
I think I'm planning on playing, but if at any point this I start to feel unsafe, if it starts to take a toll on my mental health with all these things that we have to worry about and just kind of this cloud of uncertainty hanging over everything, you know, then I'll opt out. I still don't have my test results from Friday's test. So, like, I got tested again this morning without knowing the results of my test from Friday. So we got to clean that up, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that's one thing that, like, makes me a little nervous.
And should make you nervous if you test on Friday and you still don't have your results.
Yeah, and that's what makes me think that this baseball thing could go through some peaks and valleys, and maybe every game that on the schedule that came out today will not be played. And if it is played, do you want to play it without guys like Mike Trout and Sean Doolittle? Because I think, you know, David Price of the Dodgers opted out over the weekend. And Price was, I don't know if it'd be right to call him a throw-in, Mace, but he was one of the conditions that the Dodgers had to take.
Right,
if they
the Red Sox
to get
wanted
Mookie
to unload
Betts.
His salary, yeah, for
right.
sure.
So, I again, I don't want to come off as a hypocrite here. I said when Avery Bradley and if Dwight Howard opt out of the bubble in Orlando that I would have no problem with it. So if I'm going to apply that standard to those guys, I can't have a different standard for guys like Mike Trout and David Price. I think if any athlete doesn't see fit to play, doesn't have it in his heart to play, and especially in Trout's case, when and the only thing Trout has said publicly is that baby is due in August.
Right.
We don't know beginning of August. We know middle of August. So even if he goes down and plays for 2 weeks, he's you heard him say it there. He doesn't want to bring it home to his wife or home to his baby. So if he just said, look, it's not worth it, guys, I'm opting out. He was running drills the other day, Mace, with a mask.
Right, right.
You know, I wouldn't blame Mike Trout if he sat out, because if I was him, I probably would.
No, and I mean, I think that it's completely understandable on the part of Trout. You know, you don't want to bring it home. You've got a pregnant wife. It's your first child. You're going to miss the delivery if you're involved in this baseball startup potentially. So, yeah, no, I totally understand. And there are going to be other players who decide not to play. That doesn't mean it's not worth playing. You still play a season with whoever is willing to play. And frankly, that's most everybody. Most everybody seems willing to play at this point. David Price did opt out, citing family's health as a priority. You can't say anything about that. I mean, it's a decision. COVID is a real thing. Coronavirus
is a real
thing.
A couple of months ago, you felt pretty strongly that anybody who would, when we were talking about Mookie Betts, Buster brought up the idea of a guy sitting out because he was a free agent. We used George Springer or Mookie Betts as an example of somebody that may sit out because they don't want to screw up their free
right.
agency. You said that would be unconscionable. Do you still feel the same way?
Well, I mean, that's what Davis Bertans is doing for the Washington Wizards.
Right.
Davis Bertans is specifically doing it just to protect his season of free agency. Not a mention of health.
Well, no, he's had two ACLs.
Right, but I mean health in terms of COVID.
Right.
He didn't cite family concerns. He didn't cite COVID safety concerns. He cited, I don't want to get hurt just before I'm going to be a free agent. That's a different scenario than David Price. You know, I don't want to put my family through this. Or Mike Trout, I don't want to bring this home to my pregnant wife or my newborn child. I mean, those are different categories as opposed to, for example, it might be different if Mookie Betts chose to sit out because he is right. going to be a free agent.
Or, you know, you talk about the Dwight Howard who might sit out to raise social awareness. That's a hard one.
Yeah, that's a hard one. But again, understandable. I think all these are personal choices. And you can't put people in the line of potential illness for the sake of the game if they don't want to play.
Yeah, and why would you want somebody there that doesn't want to be there? Exactly. I don't know how well that guy's going to perform anyway.
All right, coming up next for you, we're going to do Radio Tinder. Lindsay is not here today. Funch, how are you feeling about it? All right, it is time for Radio Tinder. Michael Funches is in for Linz as our Tinder host today. Funch, take it away.
All right, Shia LaBeouf got a huge chest tattoo for a new movie. Swipe left or swipe right?
I'm curious. Swipe right.
All right, so Shia has a new movie called The Tax Collector coming out next month. I just saw the trailer. It looks really, really good.
It does look good, yeah.
In the movie, LaBeouf plays a Jewish guy who grew up in the streets of East Los Angeles and grew up to be like a huge gang leader. For the movie, LaBeouf actually got the word creeper tattooed across his stomach in addition to numerous other ink for the art, or for the movie, I'm sorry, I should say. And director of the movie, Dare Aired, said, he's one of the best actors I've worked with, and he's the most committed to his body and soul. He had a tooth pulled on the movie Fury, and then on The Tax Collector, he got his whole chest tattooed. He kind of goes all in, and I've never known anyone that committed. Now, guys, you think you can commit to your craft just like Shia did to his?
Well, here's what I don't understand about that, Mace. You have a fairly significant tattoo on your chest.
Yep.
If you were doing it for a movie, why wouldn't you just do a temporary tattoo?
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't just do a temporary. There's a famous story. Do you remember the movie Marathon Man?
Sure. Laurence Olivier, so, Dustin Hoffman. Is it safe?
So in the scene, in the movie, for those of you that haven't seen it, by the way, if you've never seen it, it's an unbelievable movie. There's a famous scene where Dustin Hoffman he's had his teeth drilled and pulled out of his head, and he's in all kinds of pain, and he's really struggling, and he's emotional, and he's just kind of a mess, and he keeps screwing up the scene with Laurence Olivier, who's probably one of the greatest actors of all time. And finally, Laurence Olivier says, I don't know what you're doing to yourself, young man, but why don't you just try acting? And that's what I would say to Shia LaBeouf. How about just acting, man? You don't need to have that creeper tattoo on your body for the rest of your life. You don't really need to have that tooth pulled. I mean, seriously, it's only acting. You don't have to hurt your body in order to do it.
Yeah, I don't understand.
What's
why
that method of acting that he uses, though?
I guess it's method.
Method, right?
Yeah, he's a method actor.
Where he's like, you know, he's that guy off the set. He wants him to call the character's name and all that stuff.
The two other guys you hear that about all the time are Daniel Day-Lewis and Christian Bale. That apparently when they get a role, they go completely 100% all in.
These things are not necessary. You don't need to. Like, for example, Christian Bale did a movie called The Machinist. The Machinist, yeah. And he got his weight down to like 95 pounds.
Oh, geez.
It's like, no, you don't need to do that. That's why they have special effects makeup, dude. That's why they have CGI. You can't lose 50 pounds for a role. It's not healthy.
And guys, this tattoo is like covering his whole stomach and chest.
I'm looking at it. It is awful, man. It is awful. Creeper. Of all the things to have tattooed on yourself, creeper. All right, Funch?
All right, Kenny Smith really believes in his back-to-back Houston Rockets. Swipe left or swipe right?
I'll swipe left.
Yeah, let's skip that.
Okay.
Did 20 years ago.
Okay, Chris Paul is still peeved about the failed trade to the Lakers. Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe right.
All right, Paul was on a Knuckleheads podcast with Darius Miles and Quentin Richardson when he was asked about the failed trade in 2011. I was on the phone with my brother and my agent and all that. We were figuring out a plane to get on to New Orleans to get us to LA. Let's just say my agent clicked over and said, hold on, clicked over, and then he came back on. He was like stuttering, and he was hot. We was hot. Me and Kobe had talked, and you know what I'm saying? We already were talked already and all that. It was a lot. It was a lot. Now, guys, how much different would the last 9 years for the Lakers and even the NBA would have been if this trade had happened?
Oh, it would have been ridiculously different.
Oh,
that would have been arguably a backcourt comparable to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Chris Paul's, that's two Hall of Fame guards playing together in the prime of their careers. And I'm trying to remember, they still could have traded for Dwight Howard or, in worst case scenario, kept Andrew Bynum, right?
Yes. I mean,
Gasol and Odom were going out in the deal. But Chris Paul and Kobe Bryant on the same team would have been ridiculous.
Oh, it would have been unbelievable.
And you guys would have to think there would be no Lob City, no Clipper resurgent at all.
No. No, Lob City wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened. I mean, the Chris Paul trade, you know, David Stern, in an unadulterated way, changed the course of NBA history. And it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision then. It's the wrong decision now. The league was acting as the owner of New Orleans, the New Orleans franchise at that point. And they were calling the shots. So it was really the Lakers versus the rest of the league. I've always felt like the Lakers should have filed an antitrust suit against the league. I thought it was completely unfair and unwarranted that that trade be overturned. So, I it sticks with me. The future, the league's history was changed in a real way by David Stern's decision.
You guys got to think that they would have won a title at least, right?
Yes.
Well, they were coming off of three straight finals appearances. You know, so I think it was the first year after that. They had lost in the spring, Phil Jackson's last year. Boy, would it change the fortunes of Mike Brown. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So wait a minute.
Yeah.
So that would have been 2011?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was in and that would have happened. But remember, there was a lockout? And
right. So it happened in the summer? Right.
No, it happened like around December. December, right before the season started that year.
The season started on Christmas, and that all went down in the first week of December.
Right. Yeah, boy, wrong decision. Wrong decision. Terrible move by David Stern. Worst move in his career.
And that's all I got for you guys.
All right. Well, that's good enough. Creeper. Right across the stomach. Creeper.
The movie looks really good, too. Really
movie
good.
Does look good.
He's a good actor. Good. For being a little weird, he's a really good actor.
Yeah. By the way, I wanted to mention this. I started to, John, get tons of emails now about the show. And you can email me at any point, venicemace@gmail.com. That's venicemace, M-A-S-E, @gmail.com. Hearing from people all over the world. And you missed a really, really big day Friday. Do you know what it was? Or Thursday. You know what it was?
No.
I will tell you what it was next. It's something you care dearly about.
Okay, good.
Plus, the Dodgers schedule is out. We will take a look at that for you. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.